Hey everybody, welcome to Generation Now. Let's get to it. He is the voice of my childhood, and for that, so many others. He's left an indelible mark on my life in ways very few others have or perhaps ever will. Every time I tape a show like this, or when I was a wrestling commentator, anything I do, I ask myself, am I telling stories the way that my guest today does every single week? And I'm still aiming to reach such a high bar. Folks, this is one of the highlights of my life. He is a New York Times bestselling author, a lead commentator for All Elite Wrestling Wednesday Night Dynamite on TNT, and the host of the hit podcast, Grilling JR with Conrad Thompson. His new book, Under the Black Hat, My Life in WWE and Beyond, is available right now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the voice of pro wrestling, my hero, and a national icon, Jim Ross. Jim, how you doing?
Oh, wow. What an introduction. That was the nicest introduction I've had today.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thank you. So first of all, how are you doing? I know you're in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You posted on Twitter this week that a relative of yours, someone in your family, lost their life to COVID-19.
Yeah, my oldest daughter's father-in-law, so the other grandpa to my granddaughters, died on Easter Sunday. So anybody that thinks it can't happen to me, or this is blown out of proportion, or this is some sort of conspiracy theory that there's no virus there, is ludicrous. So folks that just got to be smart, stay home. Can you just stay home? Don't overthink it. Don't try to be defiant. Of this generation has a habit of trying to be defiant. And I'll do it. No, I got a better idea. Well, the better idea is living a little longer. And if you don't follow the rules of what we're told to by scientists and experts who are smarter than us, then we're really stupid. And I don't want to die of stupidity. So I'm staying home. Today, I'm in our little isolated warehouse. I'm signing books. This book right here. You know, we have this great offer on our website at jrsbbq.com, which we can talk about. You get a personalized autograph like I did here for this gentleman named Cody. So I'm signing their life signatures.
Is it that Cody? Or he might probably already has a book already.
Well, there's a lot of Cody's right. It's a popular name. It's a baby boomer name, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I'm being very careful, but I'm feeling good right now. Thank you very much for asking.
So Under the Black Hat is already a bestseller. You held the book up, coming off the heels of Slobber Knocker, another bestseller. And you said on your podcast that this is likely the last book you'll write like this one. So talk about your journey coming from Slobber Knocker and what made you decide, hey, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to write another book.
Well, Troy, I didn't finish my story. The Slobber Knocker ended with Austin beating Shawn Michaels, and who I think I proclaimed the Austin era has begun or something along those lines. And so there was a lot of story to tell after that. So all we did was pick up the story chronologically from Austin versus Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 15, I think it was. I think it was. No, set 14.
14, 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 14. So, and just continued to tell the story. And I had planned on in Under the Black Hat to talk about, and I did, you know, the Attitude Era, Monday Night Wars, the original XFL, WWE going public, things of that nature. So, and then the unfortunate thing, well, of course, a couple more bouts of Bell's palsy, losing my gig a time or two, you know. But the main thing that happened, obviously, was the death of my wife in March of 17. Jan got killed about 30 seconds from our home. And where I'd pull in to go to my house, that's where she got hit. So I drive by her spot every day. God bless her. And so I just had an unfinished story to tell. And I wanted to address her and her importance in the life of the EVP of talent relations of WWE and the role she played in being a great hostess, mentor, confidant. She was just a wonderful human being. And so somebody said to me the other day, I thought it was kind of interesting. He said, I didn't know you were going to write a love story. And I said, well, I didn't either. But it's worked out real well. You know, Paul O'Brien is an amazing partner to collaborate with, and I love him, and he's just a tremendous guy to work with. So that was a reason. The story was untold. Now, I can never write a more personal book than this one. There aren't any, I don't have any of those left in me. Unless some crisis comes up in my lifetime, I don't foresee at this moment. But there are other topics going forward that I might be interested in writing about, especially the early days of AEW. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on. I'm a creative guy, Troy. I enjoy staying busy, and I enjoy challenging myself. So I know there are more books between Paul, Brian, and myself. I just don't know exactly what road we're going to travel.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because the book really is a love letter to Jan, and we'll touch on that. But a constant theme in the book that I find is your undying need and desire to prove to WWE and upper management your worth, and how they constantly, seemingly, bully you with the segments that they put you in on television. And you said at one point in the book that you found it interesting that WWE began or was airing commercials for their Be a Star anti-bullying campaign. Do you believe you were bullied by WWE, or were you just a ploy to get Mr. McMahon's, Vince McMahon's rocks off, proverbial rocks off, per se?
I think I was a character that he liked to challenge. He enjoyed, I think, ribbing me and having some fun. Sometimes it wasn't always fun. And you know, the defense is, oh, we're only kidding. Oh, it's just a character. It's just a TV show. It's just entertainment. And maybe that's all true, but I never played the role of a character. So when I got Diggs and Knox, I knew that there were some in that administration that didn't like me and that they were taking shots. And so I had, my dad gave me some great advice. If you're going to take a man's money, do the work that he wants you to do. And I was taking a lot of money from Vince. I was making a great living. And I wasn't going to screw it up because of my ego, my fragility. That's stupid. That's another stupid thing I would stay away from. So I don't look at it as any, was it bullying? Hell, I don't know. I don't even know what bullying. I was uncomfortable at times. I never filed a complaint, obviously. That'd be stupid. Another stupidity thing. I'm stupid on here. I'm using stupid a lot here today. But no, I don't know. I don't know if it was or not. You know, I just think he had fun because I wore my feelings on my sleeve. I was very expressive, and I was also very outspoken. Sometimes my outspokenness got me in trouble, to be very frank about it. And sometimes good old JR was a little bit a handful to manage because of the landscape that I had to take care of. It was always a lot of pressure. And a never-ending job that didn't end at 9 to 5. It didn't end Monday through Friday. This is 24/7, period. And people say, oh, nobody works 24/7. I didn't work 24/7, but I got phone calls, I had meetings, I had all kinds of things, travel, all the time. There's no tag out. I never got a hot tag to sit down until I came to Oklahoma, and then that was a better deal for me, thank God.
Right. So you talk about in the book, too, about your role with Triple H early on. And it's one of the segments. I mean, of course, I'm a lifelong fan, but I went back and watched after reading your book, and Triple H going and essentially using you to get that character over. I don't know, you're a wrestling historian, you've been in the business for decades. From my understanding, I have never heard of an announcer being so over that he is then used to get over full-time talent. What were your thoughts about them calling you into the ring to start being essentially, you know, beat up in the ring by Triple H and others to get those characters over?
Well, I knew my role, so everything that happened was not a surprise. And I felt uncomfortable because I didn't think I'd be very good at it. And there again is my ego squeezing the common sense out of me. But I believe that at the end of the day, I felt pretty damn good about it because, like you said, people in my role have never been put in this opportunity. I would not have been put in this opportunity if I had not been popular enough with the audience in the arena and the audience at home. And then our big blow-off for a wrestling fan like me happening in that Madison Square Garden main event going on last on Raw. From the Garden, sold out, and here comes Batista. All that was to do, Troy, was to set up Batista, obviously, and Triple H. And for me to be able to help facilitate that, look, Triple H is one of my guys I signed. You know, he signed with J.J. early, but I renegotiated his deal and gave him his best contract because he earned it during my tenure. And, of course, Dave Bautista was in the class with several other Hall of Fame-level guys that we sent to OVW once upon a time. So I was helping my guys. And if I have a problem with that, that means my ego is completely distorted. So the only apprehensions I had were, will I be successful in this role? I don't feel comfortable, but I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do for the company and these guys.
And you touched on it. You signed Hunter. You signed Cena. Bautista worked with OVW, The Rock, Mankind. You had a hand not only as a commentator on air, but developing the roster and talent relations. The business is entering an era that is unprecedented. I mean, it was already before, but could get even worse now that we're hearing reports that there might not be live events until 2021 or 2022. So revenues are at an all-time high in the business, but it's never been, in my opinion, less nationally relevant. Ratings are under 2 million people a week for Raw, upwards from 10 million in your era. I mean, that's shocking. Your thoughts on the decline and now entering a new era where there might not be live events for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's a tough road we're on because it's uncharted waters. We've never driven this far down this particular road. So I don't know when this thing's going to return to some sort of normalcy, quite frankly. And it's just hard to predict something that's so unusual and unique. I don't know. I think the business is healthy, but you know, one of WWE's issues could be quite simply their programming, their creative. Here's the deal, man. We have to overthink this. It's really simple. Everybody's staying home. You're looking for things to watch. There's no secret here, right? But if you got to give me a reason to watch. If the product is compelling enough on anybody's pro wrestling show and episodically produced with some logical creativity involved in it, people are going to watch. People are not watching because, I don't like wrestling anymore. They don't like that wrestling anymore. It could be better said. So, but still, WWE is still the big dog in the yard. Their talent's making a lot of money. I'm proud of that. But, it's just, if you give them what they want to see, man, give them what they want to see, they'll watch. It's that simple. It's always been that way, and it always will be that way.
When you started, people started seeing the decline in the early 2000s. It seems as though that the company has said that they're kind of okay with that they're just going to hold on to the fans they have, charge triple the ticket prices. I mean, WrestleMania tickets can go for $3,000. And more than that. So when the decline started happening, right, what was the response from the executives in WWE?
Well, the business is cyclical. So it wasn't the fact that we hadn't had downturns before. So nothing extraordinary. There was no panic. There was the hell, we got to have a meeting. Let's have a meeting. Get everybody in here. No, it wasn't that way at all. The business has always been very cyclical. And look, pro wrestling is attraction driven. People got to get that to their head. Attraction driven, meaning people want to see stars or who they perceive to be stars. Our Attitude Era locker room was loaded with star power, hungry, athletic guys who wanted to be the top dog and make the most money. And so that's where we are here. It's attraction driven. You know, we've got, I'm not sure when you're going to post this, but Wednesday night I'm doing solo commentary on Jon Moxley versus Jake Hager. And, those guys are great examples of being hungry and wanting to be stars. And they are stars in my eyes. You know, Moxley's the closest thing to Stone Cold since Stone Cold, in my view. That's my personal opinion, not endorsed by the company or not. I don't know. And, of course, Hager is one of the guys I helped direct to pro wrestling. He's an Oklahoma boy. He went to school here in Norman at OU. He's a real deal. So it's an attraction-driven business. And so every promoter is obligated to develop bigger stars. And there's a way of doing that. And sometimes others try to reinvent the wheel. I want to fix this system. I'm going to get this guy over this way. Well, no, you're not. People like to attach their wagon to success. and 50-50 booking type scenarios is not attaching your wagon to anything successful.
I was just going to mention one of your t-shirts says 50-50 booking sucks, right? I mean, that seems to be the formula that WWE has perpetuated, especially over the last 15 or so years after the Attitude Era. But I also think that another point that is important is the commentary. Because if you have the greatest attraction and you don't have the right storyteller, that could be a miss too. We saw that arguably during this past WrestleMania. Many people were complaining on Twitter during the Edge and Randy Orton match. They were clamoring for your voice. I mean, you had depth also at the commentary position. You had Taz, Jerry Lawler, Tony Schiavone during that era. And on page 161 of Under the Black Hat, you say that in your voice, there is a passion and experience that WWE couldn't teach. Your thoughts on the commentary in the business as a whole. No one has ever been able, not that you can be replaced, but no one's ever been able to live up to you, period. And some say, including myself, that it will never happen.
Well, I don't know, Troy. You know, there's a lot of good announcers out there. In WWE, they have a formula. And they have a certain and specific way that they are producing talent nowadays. And I believe, and I may be wrong, and it's not sour grapes, for God's sakes. It's not, oh, JR really knocked up, threw him on the bus on that interview. No, come on. That's childish. That's Twitterverse stuff. I ain't going there. But they have a system. And they do not encourage, at least in my opinion, that's all it is, in my opinion, individuality. That sure as hell, the last thing that Vince McMahon wants is another JR who got more popular than some of the talent. Hence, I was used in top angles, as you've already talked about. I kissed Mr. McMahon's ass. I've had a concrete block broken over my head by Eric Bischoff. I got knocked out by The Undertaker. I got the ankle locked by Kurt Angle. I had a cow on ice, ugly-ass match with Michael Cole, which was, I apologize to every wrestling fan in the world that saw that. it's fans want individuality. They want genuineness. And they want people, they don't want to be zoomed on their commentary. They don't want to hear just lip service, obligatory throwaway lines, like you'd hear on SportsCenter a lot. Same deal. Repetitiveness. Cool. And so I'm thinking maybe that's the issue, the lack of promoting individuality and letting talents be themselves, because they all sound from the same kettle of fish. The thing is real simple here doing the wrestling announcing or any other broadcasting. You have to have product knowledge, and I think these guys have product knowledge. You got to be able to utilize your own creativity. And when you do, then there's an authenticity of it, and people can step over the fact that it's showbiz and get lost in the story. The obligation is real simple, man. The wrestlers make the music, and we broadcasters provide the lyrics. If we're paying attention, if we got a feel, if we're allowed to create, we can make this thing really good. At least that's my theory on it. Since I've been working for Tony Khan in AEW, and he's been on the headset for all my matches since October. I've heard him say something to me maybe three or four times in that whole time period. That would have been three or four times in a couple of minutes in WWE, because they're overproducing. They feel like they have to control the creativity, control the development of talents, or that's the seeming that appears to me. So I love the AEW style, because Tony Schiavone, ex-Calibur, and I are allowed to be ourselves. We have fun. We respect the business. We know our job is not to get us over, it's to get these talents over. And I think we were, before this virus went crazy, we're doing a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, and I was just it's like you've been a broadcaster. I was going to transition to AEW, one of the best of all time. I mean, you're on Wednesday nights, the no audience feel, but AEW has received praise across the industry for being the best at handling promoting a show, putting on a show without an audience. So what are your thoughts about losing that audience and how AEW has kind of managed that?
Well, the thing Tony Khan has done and his team is find solutions to problems. He's a problem solver. He's very bright. I would say he's the Rain Man of pro wrestling. Tony's amazing. He really is. He's just, and he has a great feel, natural feel. I knew that from the first time I met him out in Long Beach, California during the New Japan Access TV weekend a couple years ago. So I just, common sense, we don't overthink it. You know, somebody's idea, probably Tony's, to put a few of the talents that were there at ringside just to make a little noise, add a little ambiance to it. Was that brilliant? I don't know if it's brilliant, but it worked. So we've done a nice job, I think, of that. Look, I think fans will say, I'd rather have first-run wrestling programming, even if it's in an empty arena, than having reruns or no new programming at all. So I'm happy with what we've done. And, you know, when I broadcast, I watch the monitor. I don't look up the ring and over here at this guy and, oh, there's a pretty girl over there. I look at the monitor. So my head is like this. So now if you shoot it tight, I'm not looking to all the empty seats. And if I did, you think I haven't done TV wrestling or studio wrestling with 20 or 30 people in my career? Of course I have. With a stick mic and two cameras? Absolutely. So it's not intimidating to me. It's not a big a deal as some people make it out to be, at least in my world.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of kind of this new world, right? Earlier this week, the governor of Florida said that WWE and essentially UFC and AEW eventually are essential businesses, saying that pro wrestling, WWE, is woven into the societal fabric. Your thoughts on pro wrestling being deemed an essential business?
It's iffy. You know, I'm in it. I'm in the wrestling business. I'm glad that the governor made that decision. I'm sure he had unique influence, you know, and you can generally follow the trail of money to that sort of scenario, this future money. I'm glad he did it because it gives, look, I want people to work. I want guys and gals in my business to work and earn a living, to fulfill their dream, to get their ass off their couch, out there, and go to work in a controlled environment. So I'm glad the governor did what he did. But if you asked me before the decision was made, do you think the governor will deem pro wrestling an essential business? I would say, are you crazy? Of course not. Because if you look at the other real essential businesses, that their doors are locked. And they don't understand why they're not getting the same treatment. And I can understand their grievance. So it's iffy to me. But I'm glad it's being done so that my friends can continue to work. The cameramen, the truck people, the editors, production guys, they can all work. The talents, you know, they want to stay active. They want to stay busy. And you know, they're trying to build their brands, man. So the more exposure they get, and some of these guys, I don't know if they really realize, they should really maximize their minutes right now because they got a nice stage they can perform on and get noticed. So when this thing blows over somewhere, sometime, they'll be even more over and more have more equity within their respective companies.
I want to talk about kind of the in-ring product because of the lack of audience. It has kind of highlighted the brilliance of others, Chris Jericho having a great time out on commentary, and has highlighted some interesting things for me. Now, I'm an old school guy. I'm a fan of Mid-South. I'm a fan of the Attitude Era. So seeing guys, and I know I'm going to get heat for this online, but I don't care, guys like Orange Cassidy and others, that's a very different presentation style than the one that I am familiar with. And it's sure. Even more highlighted in an empty arena. So I'm curious about your thoughts on the presentation difference coming from Bill Watts. I mean, he would have stabbed or shot some of those guys for doing that.
It was a different era. It's like saying right now, well, you know, Barry Switzer's wishbone was the best offense in all of college football, and if somebody ran it today, it'd be even better. I don't know about that. Times change. Athletes change. The audience changes, evolves. They have different demands. They want more. The audience nowadays has very little patience. And so they want things. They want immediate gratification. We live in a society where it's, we'll deliver it to you. Of course, now they will. Or you can go to our drive-thru, 30 minutes or it's free type deal. That's where we live. We live in that instant society where people don't want to invest more time. So it is changing, and I've had to adjust too. I'm not going to say, well, I'm not going to pull a pissing contest that Well, if they don't change that presentation, I'm not watching wrestling anymore. That's just why I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it. Well, you know you're lying. Of course you're going to watch it because you've got an investment in it for years and years and years. You may not like today's, you know, product as much. It's still wrestling, and that's how I look at it. To me, it's still pro wrestling. It's still my business. It's still my friends and my and guys I know and ladies I know making a living. I am all for it. So, and I'm a big fan of Orange Cassidy. I had no idea what the character was like, going to be like, and I didn't think it'd ever get over. And I was wrong. I was wrong. Orange Cassidy is getting over. We got a lot of young guys getting over. Jungle Boy Jack is getting over. Jungle Boy.
MJF.
MJF's a big player. He's going to be a big star. We got a lot of 20-somethings that have never been to the big dance. Sammy Guevara. You know, a lot of guys, man. We got so many guys that are young and vibrant and are trying to find their way. Many of them had never, ever had a nationally televised TV match. It's different than working an indie show. Big difference. Huge difference. So they're still learning their craft. And I'm going to be there to help them live their journey. I've had mine. I'm on the back nine. I don't have a problem saying that. I'm 68 years old. I'm in the high risk group. I don't want to fly right now. And Tony Khan is supporting that wholeheartedly. But the bottom line is that we got a young roster that's still evolving. And I think wrestling fans are going to love it as time goes on. We're doing good in our competitive venture with the WWE on Wednesday nights. But the great thing is these kids are enthusiastic. Their hearts are in the right place. If somebody doesn't like it because their presentation is different, then here's what you've got to do. You got to figure out something else to watch. Because if you're going to get all frustrated, not you, Troy, but anybody, you get all frustrated about the presentation of pro wrestling. Are you kidding me? Really? In today's society, what we're all dealing with, and you're pissed off because it's not Killer Carl Cox and Dick Murdoch? You can't replicate Killer Carl Cox and Dick Murdoch. Right. That has nothing to do with the booker. It has to do with the system and guys getting the right kind of training and the reps. So I don't really have a problem with it. I'm privileged to still be in the wrestling business, and I'm still going to contribute as long as I'm alive to its growth in whatever direction that takes.
We're winding down here, but I want to touch on the fact that this book, Under the Black Hat, is the best wrestling book I've ever read.
Thank you.
And it's a love letter. You're welcome. To Jan, your wife. But she said something that was really interesting to me. She said, one of my favorite quotes from the book comes from her, when she said that Vince's world is almost like that of Michael Jackson's world. So could you describe that quote?
Well, she woke up. I woke up from a morphine-induced sleep after I got released from intensive care from the colon surgery. And Vince had called me earlier that day to say he was going to, he said, be sure you watch Raw tonight, JR. I'm going to do something real special for you on the show. And I was groggy, foggy. So I said, okay. And hung the phone up myself. And Jan said, was that Vince? I said, yeah, he says he's going to do something really special for me tonight. And then I went back to sleep. I didn't watch Raw. I just had 13 inches of my large intestines removed. I was in bad way. I was 30 days from dying, and perforated my colon, my large intestine perforated. I was poisoning myself. Long story short, so I take I take my nap, and I wake up, and she's sitting on the couch crying, and I thought, oh my gosh, she got a bad call from a parent because they had elderly parents, or something. And I said, honey, what's wrong? And she said, well, why does he do that? I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I was asleep. So she described Dr. Heine and the nurse slobberknockers and all that good stuff. And then pulling JR's head out of his ass, which I never got that punchline. But here's the thing about it. Here's what's suspicious about that. Why would you put that skit in the last segment of Raw, which we had always reserved for the Rocks, the Stone Colds, the Triple H's, the Undertakers, the stars? That was the star segment. And as a talent, I can tell you, if a talent would say, oh man, JR, I'm excited. I made it to segment 11 tonight. I say, yeah, man, congratulations. Maximize those minutes. So it made no sense. And so she told me, and she was crying and didn't understand why he was doing it. She asked me why. I said, honey, I don't know. She said, well, he's just, I can't understand him. And she said, he's like Walt Disney and Michael Jackson. He couldn't live in a regular world comfortably in his mind's eye. So he created his own world to live in. And she was hit the nail right on the head. You know, it was unique. Her observations as a civilian, but JR's wife, and being in the wrestling business with me for 25 years, was from a woman's perspective. Look, if she was still alive today, I would encourage Simon & Schuster to sign her up and let her write her book. That'd been a dandy. So, but that's where that was. So, you know, just, you can always say, well, we're just ribbing or just entertainment. But why was it in the last segment, the money segment?
Yeah,
it didn't make any sense. To me, that was just, it was distasteful in that respect. But look, I lived through it. I got over it. Here I am talking to you. A book. I'm looking forward to calling Moxley and Hager. Life is good for me. You know, my children are healthy. I'm healthy, thank God. And so I got really nothing big time to bitch about. Mm.
Two more quick things here. We got to talk about your barbecue sauce. On your social media, you said that business is picking up, especially with ketchup and your mustard.
Yeah.
You barbecue sauce. And you have a special offer on the website, jrsbbq.com, with the book. So talk about what you're doing at the website.
Well, my partner and I started this little website here in Norman. We remodeled a outbuilding, and we made a little warehouse out of it. It's pretty cool. We sell barbecue sauce, two flavors of sauce that my mother originated the original, and my wife helped support. Jan developed the jalapeno honey mustard, the Main Event mustard, and the chipotle ketchup. We've also got beef jerky and seasoning, which is wonderful. And that's at jrsbbq.com. And of course, that's where you can get your personalized book, Black Hat. And we also have Slobberknocker books for sale. So just check out the site. It costs nothing to look, Troy. The site is free. It costs you nothing to look. jrsbbq.com. And I'm here today in our little slot signing books. I got books to sign for all these fans that have ordered books. And we're going to get them out today. And I think so far we sold probably around 1,500 books out of our little shop. So it's doing good. It's doing really good. I'm very blessed and very thankful.
Final question. One of the big thoughts and kind of metaphors throughout the whole book is the difference between the portals of two worlds, going between two different portals. And that comes up at different times in the book. With the current times that we're in, the loss of your wife, your current time now in AEW and the transition away from WWE, what have you learned about those two portals?
Wow. Well, honesty, just we got to steer the course, be honest about all things. And sometimes honesty gives you an abrasive answer, but if it's true, deal with it. And I changed my philosophy. I don't do business with people that are negative. I don't need to do new business with people that are negative. If I was having a negative experience in AEW, I would tell you, because I'm an honest man. But that's far from the truth. I love being there. So, but I just think we're on this journey, man. And I say this all the time, our tomorrows are not guaranteed. We can't do anything about yesterday, Troy. Nothing. It's history. We can learn about it and try to improve from it. We can't. Our tomorrow's not guaranteed. So what do we have? We have today. And I live for today, objectively, positively, and the best I can. And I say every time, I say that when I go to the airport and I take my little roller bag, I got no room in it for negatives. And when my buddies call, they're just bitching and moaning about everything in the world, I try to get off the phone as quickly as I can. I just don't have time to soak up all the negative stuff. And so I've learned that a lot. That was a lot of Jan stuff. You know, I had very little self-esteem. And sometimes that might have been a ploy to make sure JR is uncomfortable. But when you have three bouts of Bell's palsy, when you can't smile, when you have a Southern accent, you're not at the top of the list of television qualifications for television announcers. So I got reminded of that at various times by various people in certain subtle ways. So, and I had to work through that. It had been for her, in her encouragement, her love, and her honesty, that would never have happened. I'd still be miserable and pissed off. but I'm not anymore, thanks to her and her love, and thanks to the wrestling fans. The outpouring of support that I've had through various ups and downs is one of the most heartwarming things I could ever, ever imagine. I can never repay the fans back for what they, how nice they've treated me and how they've been, I've been their guy. I've been their guy. And being an only child, I felt like when I got in the wrestling business, as it evolved, I had just married into a big family with a lot of brothers and sisters and cousins and things like that. So it's been really, really great. It's been a great ride. And I think I, Paul O'Brien and I think we did a nice job on this book of explaining that last journey to the time I left and went to AEW, why I left, my relationship with Vince, my relationship with Steve Austin, and some of the things behind the scenes there, having to convince McMahon to hire Chris Jericho, for example, Eddie Guerrero, Benoit, all those cats. So it was, I think it's going to be a fun, for a real wrestling fan or a fan of human nature, I think people are going to love it. I really do. And I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Jim, I can't thank you enough. I mean, you are the best of all time, and to be in your presence, to hear your voice, is the greatest honor of my life. And I sincerely mean that. Thank you so much.
Okay, Troy, take care of yourself. Stay healthy, and you have a great day.
Will do. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get JR's book, as he mentioned, at jrsbbq.com. It's Under the Black Hat, My Life in WWE and Beyond. Until next time, bye, everybody.